Joining us right now is EAA's chairman, Jack Pelton. Good afternoon.
Hey, Steve. Great to see you. Yeah, it is morning. It's been a fast and furious morning already. We had the FAA administrator who was in. I had a chance to take him around the grounds and show him and introduce things and then go over to the one-week wonder and pull a rivet.
You have done it yourself?
I have done it. My wife and I went over there together just now, and that's why it's a little bit late. Pulled a rivet. Got 2 days to go.
That's right. I understand Audrey Poberesny was over the other day doing it, pulling
she
a ribbon
did.
As
that,
well.
That was fantastic.
With people who've had a long-term history with EAA, I've kind of been asking the question if you have a favorite memory that you'd like to share of our founder, Paul, with the audience.
Yeah, I do. And it really was one of those moments where he provided some great wisdom and mentorship in the way Paul could do it, which is hanging out on a Saturday over at the airplane factory when I'm up here, and it was a kind of a winter's day. And, you know, you're in there, and he's got some of his buddies, and we're working on some stuff, and he's sitting there talking about experiences and things that have occurred over time and concerns he has had about EA going forward. But, you know, the way he's doing it is it was in a coaching moment. You know, you knew he was sending you a personal message to what he would like to see and what's important and making sure that I understood. And you know, for me, having been, you know, in leadership for a long, long time, it was just very memorable, very poignant and very meaningful. And I think very foundational in how I want to continue keeping the organization going in the direction that Paul founded it.
Yeah. You mentioned the FAA administrator being here. Obviously, having the FAA, the top leadership of that organization here, helps with sport and general aviation. It's done it throughout the years, and I'm glad to hear that they're on site as well. What are some of the issues that you see facing general aviation with the FAA?
Well, clearly for our membership, it's the third class medical exemption. I mean, that's number one on the list. He got that message loud and clear. You know, he did announce that they're proposing a rule. They cannot create an exemption because of the legal process of exemption is really for a single individual on a case by case. So they need to make a policy change and a rulemaking change. And they have created that rule. We haven't seen it because they can't show it to us, and it has moved out of the FAA onto the next step, which is the approval through the Department of Transportation. Then it would go out for public rulemaking, public comment.
Right.
I believe I have some ideas of what's in it, and it would be fantastic for us. It would be more than what we asked for, but I think we still got a fight ahead of us to get it approved, because when it goes out for public comment, there are certain groups in the medical field, AMA and others,
right.
AME or right. AMA, not to be confused with the modeling group,
right?
Who are very much opposed to it, and they're going to put up a pretty strong public fight. And so we're going to have to rally our members and resources and combat that fight with the facts and data as we see it. So if that doesn't work, and I told everybody on Thursday at the forum, we're not going to back down. Monday when Congressman Rokita was here, we'll go the legislative route. So this is we're in this for the long haul. We're going to get something done.
Good. And obviously, we also have support from AOPA and other GA organizations in this fight, because really everybody has an interest.
Everybody has a vested interest. We're all aligned. Everybody is working hard. AOPA, NBAA, Gamma, to get their members behind this. And you know, our collective interest is we really believe first and foremost that the third class medical is not. If you were to do away with it, you are not changing safety in any
right.
form or fashion. The facts and record doesn't show that having a third class medical is preventing accidents. So while that's being our primary objective, the secondary objective that's equally important is we think it's critically necessary to help stimulate interest in aviation. It's just another one of those barriers where every year you've got to, you know, there's cost involved. There's if you have to have a special issuance, it's people are saying, I even watched my father go through the same process years
right.
ago when he was still with us, where he said, it's just too big a hassle. And you know, I'm not flying as much as I would like to, but Jack, I'll just go fly with you in the right seat. And, you know, that's unfortunate because he loved it. I mean, that was his hobby and passion as an EA member. And we need to get rid of those boundaries and barriers.
Good. Talking about third class medical kind of leads us into sport pilot. The sport pilot rule has been out for a number of years now. How do you see that industry continuing to evolve?
We had a great forum on that. Actually, it was a celebration forum of it's the 10-year anniversary of the sport pilot rule. And, you know, one of the looming questions that came out of that forum is was it successful or not? And it depends how you measure success. I think that, and we still have a big marketing job to do, the sport pilot rule does give people an opportunity to fly at a much lower price point than getting a private pilot's license. And if you live, you know, as I spend most of my time up here, there's great areas that you can fly your entire flying career and not be in controlled airspace. So why do you need to spend the extra money and go through the hassle? You can go get a sport pilot's license and a J3 Cub and enjoy flying. And so we need to emphasize that. We need to get people to understand it. And then if they want to continue to add on, pursue, and get their other ratings, that's great. Probably the only other area that has, I don't want to say stumbled. There's a lot of offerings out there as far as airplanes, but still the price point right. is very, very difficult. And I experienced that trying to bring one to market myself. And so the newer products are still more expensive than they should be, but we still have Cubs, Arancas, Luscombs, and other airplanes that are very, very affordable. And you have the ELSA
right.
products out there.
Exactly. So 10 years.
It's been 10 years this year.
10 years. Time flies.
It does. Literally. And it was very interesting because on the panel we had an individual who was our former colleague and EAA employee, Earl Lawrence, who helped fight to get the rule through, and he's on the panel on the other side now running the FAA Directorate for Small Aircraft.
Excellent.
And so we've got a friend there to help continue to advance it. I'd still like at some point to go back and see if we can get the weight limit increased. You know, if we could expand the sport pilot up to include airplanes like the Cessna 150, the Cessna 140, 120, and I'm not trying to be biased towards Cessna, but there's a whole bunch of other airplanes then that would make accessibility better.
Exactly. Let's go from the low and slow of LSA to high speed and high altitude, the Thunderbirds.
I thought you were going to talk about the Sonics jet.
Well, yeah, we could start there. It's been a long process to work out all the details to get the Thunderbirds here. People just think they're going to show up and everything's going to be fine, but just the little knowledge that I have and my involvement in it, it's been pretty complicated, and I can't imagine what that was like from the internal EAA staff and board perspective.
A lot of people just assumed that the Thunderbirds didn't want to be here, right. And that wasn't the case. The problem was, don't you love that sound?
Yep.
The issue was our aerobatic box needs to be expanded to the east to be able to accommodate their particular routine and the regulations around it. So we took a leap of faith that we could go make that happen this year. Of course, the Thunderbirds were enthusiastic about wanting to be here. Sean Elliott and Rick Larson were tireless in going over to the east side, working with a group of residents, a group of business owners, and a group of airport occupants to work with them to accommodate the process of them moving out of their residences at 5 o'clock on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for 1 hour. Sunday it's earlier, but right. for 1 hour. And these are folks that, you know, they're on airport property or adjoining airport. They have friends and family, and they've had traditions for years. So we had to accommodate that by putting some areas over there where they could see the show, provide some refreshments, and try not to disrupt them. And at the same time, make it work for both of us. You know, we have to do it as volunteers in EA fashion. And, you know, it was great. It took a while. Those guys were tireless, I said, in doing it, but they got to a good place and people understood, and the importance will be for us to make this be seamless for them, because they have had a little bit of a confidence issue, because I guess it was tried with an Italian team years ago and we didn't execute well. So we're going to get it done, and I think we're going to have huge crowds that come in to see our nation's top, one of the two top military demonstration teams.
Right, and also some changes you mentioned on the east side, but also on the west side of the runway here in the crowd line.
We did. We decided not, instead of equally dividing it, we moved it further on the east side to try to minimize the disruption on the west side. But yes, we have to move people back to the speaker poles. We've tried to communicate it. I've noticed today people are setting up their chairs behind that, right. getting ready for it. So the EAA members, they are so wonderful, accommodating, and understanding if know it's for the right reasons. And seeing what they're doing today,
right.
it's fantastic.
We're looking forward to it.
I think that was a Twin Beach or yeah. Or is it a Lockheed?
Too far gone. Don't have my scene glasses on. But again, we'll be pulling the crowd line back at about 1:30. So any of you listening, just remember that you'll have to be behind the speaker pole. So may as well set up there now and get comfortable. What do you see for the future of the organization?
Well, you know, I think we're back on a good glide path. Good. Or excuse me, good climb. I don't want to say glide path because that's heading down. Our trajectory is good. I think we've done some things this year on the grounds to reestablish the home built area, the infrastructure. Next year we'll do some more. The rest of the activity in the association for the year, we're going to focus on trying to improve our youth programs. We have Young Eagles, 1.8 million people flown, heading towards 2 million. A great ground school course that Sporty's offer. We're trying to look at what else can we be doing. How can we find more connectivity as young people are not quite ready to take flight lessons? And how do we create just aviation enthusiasts in general? I'm looking at more build projects out into the chapters and see if we can get some sponsorship around that and get kids through kind of STEM programs excited right. about it. You know, we're not here to make pilots. I mean, that's not our main goal. Our main mission is to create aviation enthusiasts.
Right. Inspire and allow young people to decide which avenue they'd like to
exactly.
take.
Exactly.
All right. We are joined today by Jack Pelton. He's EIA's chairman of the board, and welcome back. Thank you for spending some time. I know you've got a very busy schedule all week long, so we appreciate you taking time out to bring us up to date on not only AirVenture, but kind of looking forward at the future of the organization. We do appreciate that. That is our show for today from the stand, and tomorrow we'll have Thunderbird number 3, Major Carolyn Jensen, joining us, and we'll find out. Last year we talked to her, and because of the sequester, she was not flying. She was a little disappointed, but she knew she'd be on the team this year, so we'll find out what's happened in the last 12 months, plus what she thought of flying at Oshkosh for the first time
but
today.
But Steve, you left out the best part.
What's that?
Her call sign's Blaze, and she's the pride of Wisconsin. Born
exactly.
and raised in Wisconsin,
yes.
and that's quite an honor to come back here and fly at AirVenture.
We'll look forward to that tomorrow starting at 10 o'clock. Our show is supported by the Commemorative Air Force, and we thank them for making From the Stand possible. I'm Steve Buss, and you're listening to EIA Radio.